The Guardian.
This Guardian podcast is supported by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that gives you the power of beautiful design. So you can do more than create a website, you can set yourself apart. To start your free trial, visit squarespace.com/guardian.
Football Weekly, halfway through an international break, and who knows what could happen in the next 40 minutes. We might talk England, 8 years on from Steve McClaren, this time a manager with a brolly doesn't stop them qualifying. That's Christian Brolly, of course. We might talk about the Scots, who didn't find it easy to please it, or Wales, who didn't quite get that qualifying sewn up. We'll definitely talk Iceland, as we stand by for some huffing and, yes, puffing in Euro 2016, and Holland, who got blinged up but still go down. We've got a full roundup indeed of all the weekend's action, plus the latest on King Zog, Fish Fingers and Jonathan Wilson's dreams in this Football Weekly. That's right, listeners, let's do this with Ian McCaw.
Hi, Jimbo.
Hey. Barry Glendenning.
Hello.
And Jonathan Wilson.
Morning.
Get in. Question one. Who's had fish fingers? Put your hands up. Ian, jaunty.
Yeah.
What?
The fish finger people have actually got in touch with me.
Right. And?
they're going to... I'm just back from holidays and they said they promised to send me some out once I got home.
Do you know, I've never had champagne or foie gras.
I've never had a Rolex watch.
All right.
Was it Captain Birdseye himself who got in touch? Or one of his minions?
One of his minions.
Oh. Barry, you're 40 minutes away from being on holiday for a week.
Yeah.
Good. Any plans?
Not really. I'm keeping my powder dry for a major expedition in November.
Where are you going in November?
Australia.
Are you now?
Yeah.
Any particular reason?
Because I've never been to Australia. I know quite a few people there and I want to go and see them. And the weather will be nice.
Four good reasons. JW, you probably just had a major expedition yourself, haven't you? You're always off seeing football in far-flung places.
Played cricket in Chiswick.
Bingo. All right.
Played badly, by all accounts.
Oh, God, really? An awful game. That was dreadful. Yeah.
Right.
One of those nights where you'd lie awake thinking about retirement. Or Sunday, as I called it.
Right. Here's Dave Mbongo, valiantly trying to get us back on track. If Wales and England could play in the Premier League this season, where do the Potters think they would finish? And would Barry and AC Jimbo fight over it? Ooh, a bit of a reference there to our debate the other day.
I thought it was a healthy debate.
Healthy debate.
I think we both made some salient points. I don't think either of us was completely right. I don't think either was completely wrong. But you clearly disagree.
No. Where would Wales and England... Who would finish higher, Wales or England?
Well, if they played in the league, they'd both be much better than they are now.
Because they play regularly.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And that's one of the reasons why international football's a little bit rubbish.
Right.
Is that the players just, you know, they don't get that mutual understanding that you get from training and playing together, 40 weeks of a year.
Right. Does that lead to one of the exciting things about international football, the fact that teams aren't so tactically well-drilled and aren't so familiar with each other, that it's a bit more of a free-for-all?
Up to a point. I think the danger is that before a tournament, when you do get that 2 or 3 weeks, 90% of coaches think, right, we'll get the defence right. Because the last thing anybody wants is to have sort of a 4-0 or 5-0 defeat that everybody's going to remember. So get the defence right. You don't really work on sort of attacking movement. And then you get quite dull games at international tournaments because both teams are well set up but not particularly good at breaking each other down.
Which sounds exactly like what the Welsh and Israel game was yesterday.
You saw this game, didn't you, Jonathan? You couldn't wait to get that in.
It's 90 minutes I'm never going to get back, unfortunately. Right. It's just Israel just set up with like a 5-man defence, played 3 midfielders quite deep, suffocated any space that Wales wanted to play into. And led to a rather boring game.
Well, Wales were unlucky, though, not to have a penalty, would you say?
No, I don't think it was a penalty. No.
A handball? There was also a...
I thought it was.
Yeah?
Definitely a penalty, yeah.
Oh, really?
Handball, yeah. Mm.
Well, it was still well-placed to go through. They need just 1 point from their remaining 2 games, which are away in Bosnia-Herzegovina, and then at home to Andorra. So that looks pretty much sorted. Belgium, though, denying them that ultimate qualification by getting that late goal from Hazard in their clash with Looks at Notes. Who were they playing?
Cyprus.
Ah, they were playing Cyprus.
They started off with, I think it was 9 or 10 Premier League players Belgium.
Pretty dreadful game, that, wasn't it?
Oh, did you see that one?
I came in a bad mood from the cricket and got no better watching that.
Right.
But Mark Wilmots afterwards was incredibly critical of his Belgian players and singled out Eden Hazard in particular as being the worst of them, and said that he was so bad he'd considered taking him off, but decided to leave him on because he's, you know, always capable of popping up with a late winner, and he duly did so.
He certainly did. All right, so what does excite you? When you look at, for example, the likely composition of next summer's European Championships, are there teams that do excite you? Like seeing Albania and Iceland in there, for example?
Yeah, I mean, Iceland definitely. I think they've, a little bit unlucky not to qualify for the World Cup, and they've maintained that, and I think, in a tough group as well. I mean, it's just the fact that, you know, they've got the Czechs, they've got the Dutch, they've got Turkey. They've been great. And I think they're an example of a team that's been together for a while and they do have that mutual understanding. I guess, not a European team, but if you look at Chile, one of the reasons they've been so good for 4 or 5 years, well, longer, I mean, I guess since Bielsa took over in 2007, is that they've had that sort of continuity of philosophy and a continuity of squad. And I think the difficulty for... Why are we talking about Chile? I don't know. Sorry.
Because you had to get your obligatory mention of Bielsa.
Tick. That's that
took,
done.
Took 4 minutes.
difficulty now is refreshing a squad that's grown old together.
Right.
Iceland will have that, but they're right on the way up at the minute.
Because they're right in the crest of a wave that began back with the under-21s, no, who shocked everyone a little bit back in, 2011, 4 years ago?
Yeah. No, exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's... there's loads of pieces been done on this, but the work they've done on getting indoor pitches so they can play through the winter and all that kind of thing, it's a model of how a small nation with financial resources can improve themselves.
Have you been to Iceland?
Never, no.
Okay.
So if anybody from Iceland wants to invite me. Sorry?
You have interviewed their goalkeepers.
I have interviewed, in Zagreb, their goalkeeper, Hannes Thor Haldorsen. He plays for Nek Nijmegen in Netherlands, and he as we said last time I was on, he directed their Eurovision video.
Get old. That's the one with the trolls.
With the trolls, yeah. It was a very strange interview because pretty much no question got the answer I was expecting. In that, I said to him, "What's a bit weird? Must have been a great honour." No, not really. I'm a bit annoyed I didn't do it 2 or 3 years ago. There's not many film directors in Iceland, but yeah, he's 31 now, so I guess he's. He's looking to a career beyond football.
Well, the thing is, there's not many anything in Iceland. There's a population of only 317,000, which means with them now qualified, Jaunty, they are the smallest nation ever to get through to European Championships. Not only are they the smallest, but they're 1.7 million smaller than the previous smallest, which was Slovenia. They've moved up 100 places in the FIFA ranking since Laszlo Lagerbeck took charge in 2011. They're now 23rd. What else can I tell you? Oh, here's an interesting thing. I found this on Sporting Intelligence's website. Sporting has looked at the percentage of population that go to games regularly, regularly being defined as the home matches of a particular club during the season, to see which group of fans or which nation has the most passionate football fans in Europe. And it's the Faroe Islands. Staggering 10% of Faroe Islanders go to games regularly. It's almost as if there's not much else to do in the Faroes. Iceland have 4.22%. To put that in perspective, in England it's only 2.79%, which perhaps explains.
And Ireland?
Don't know. You have to go to his website and have a look.
Okay.
All right. Anyway, they're the success story of Group A, of course, Iceland, but in a very yin and yang, salt and pepper, light and shade style balance thing. Their success is matched by the disaster currently being not enjoyed by the Dutch. To tell us more about what on earth happened to Netherlands football, let's now dial up Mikael Jongsma of Benefoot.net. Mikael, how are you this Monday?
A bit bland, I think.
Oh.
Not really in the best of moods when it comes to football. The whole country is in a bit of a meltdown, actually, so... Yeah, it's not looking pretty at the moment.
Right. This is after the heavy defeat in Turkey, which means that there's no way that the Netherlands can get an automatic qualifying spot. The best you can hope is that the Turks themselves now drop some points and you scrape into third.
Yeah, absolutely. And well, our national manager Danny Blind even got the maths wrong on television last night, saying Turkey needed 2 wins if the Dutch won both their games. But it's even worse than that, because Turkey only needs 4 points, because the results against the Netherlands ensure that they will top them when they are level on points. And the Dutch press here has been well, merciless, basically, just calling it a disaster. Even said that the Dutch are in disgust with their own national football team, which are quite strong terms, of course. So yeah, it's not looking good at all. And there's a slight sense in the Netherlands, well, we shouldn't even be trying to reach a playoff spot anymore, because we just can't be bothered anymore.
Really? Really? One of our listeners, Connor Hughes, writing in saying, has something happened to the Netherlands as a football culture?
To an extent, perhaps. It was Van Gaal, of course, did a marvelous job during the World Cup, but with a certain pragmatic approach. And because he did so well, for the manager that succeeded him, there really needs to be a statement of intent. And Huizinga said, well, we're going back to our 4-3-3 culture, trying to dominate the play. While that was brave, I mean, you do need to have the right characters for that, and you do need to be the right manager for it. And Van Gaal is very much a very hands-on manager, whereas Hiddink is more of a people's manager. And that clash in personality, it didn't really have a good effect on the Dutch national team at all. In a more general sense, though, the possession football that the Netherlands are known for has kind of it has reached its I think the right word is nadir, I think, in this. At the moment, there is a lot of focus on playing the ball out from the back, all that kind of stuff, without actually having the creative players to ensure that you're a bit more potent in attack, and that's a huge problem. And to an extent, there's a certain lack of development with the Dutch national, with Dutch coaches in general, I think, as well. Very few are really innovative, as the Dutch tended to be in earlier decades. So yeah, it looks like a bit of a structural problem. That said, this generation kind of has one big problem, and that is that there is no there are just no quality players in the age group of 26 to 29, like the players in their peak age. It's either the old guard in Robin van Persie, Snyder, of course, or it's the really young ones of 21, 22 coming through, like Memphis Depay and Jetro Willems, for example. So there's just a lack of balance. And yeah, it's going to be really curious to see what will happen with Dutch football in general in the next few years.
Mikael, loads of people around the world are going to be hoping that Holland still make it through. And to be fair, Turkey's running does look more difficult. But from what you're saying, it doesn't sound like the Dutch are particularly bothered. It's almost like they've fallen out of love with football.
No, it has been such a disappointing run of games. And you can see the results. It's been seven losses since the World Cup in 12 games, I think, which is enormous for a country like the Netherlands. And the brand of football that's been played it's just so unattractive to watch. It's a lot of possession, but it's not in any way incisive or anything. And there is this huge feeling that the only star player that is out there is Arjen Robben. And it's not fun to watch. It's really painful to watch, actually. And when you look at what happened against the Turks, just going behind after 10 minutes again, I think it's been like five or six times since the World Cup that the Dutch have gone behind in the first 10 minutes. It's just every time again, mistakes are being made. And even though the Turks did deserve to win it, the 3 goals were largely farcical again as well, I think, in terms of how bad the defending was. And you do get a bit indifferent at one point when you see players perform like that.
Well, Mikael, as I say, it's not over yet. Not over yet. Fingers crossed for that trip to Kazakhstan on the 10th of October.
Well, yeah, you never know. I mean, it would be spectacular if we can pull off a 1-0 win there. Never know.
All right. Super. Mikael, thanks so much for joining us on this day of days.
No worries, and congrats with your qualification. Or is it isn't done, is it?
It is. It is done.
It is? Well, it's congrats then.
I think.
Might have to support you guys.
Yeah.
All the best.
Okay. Thanks, Mikael. Nice segue there from Mikael Jongsma. What do you think, Jonathan? High scoring Wayne Rooney and his brave England boys. Anything excite you about this?
No. Sorry.
They booked their hotel.
There you go.
Yeah.
Looks nice, doesn't it?
Yeah, the Auberge de Jeux de Pomme.
Jeux de
Pomme. Chantilly.
That's, Jeux de Pomme is, it's indoor tennis. It's real tennis. That's what they used to call it. That's my nugget on this.
Wayne Rooney big into that?
Hmm?
Is Wayne Rooney big into that?
I don't know. It depends if that's a euphemism or not.
The
I'm not
second
sure.
biggest art gallery in France is
about size,
also
it?
There. So if he's not
after
into indoor tennis, he can...
Is the Louvre the biggest? Or?
Yeah.
Yeah. Is the Louvre the biggest art gallery in France? Oh, dear. Anyway, but in football terms, that's 7 wins out of 7, and they won 6-0... And Wayne Rooney equaled Bobby Charlton's record. Hey,
I know, and goals equaled Bobby Charlton's record as well.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Well, they're all locked on 49.
Wow, brilliant.
Which actually own goals.
Oh.
Oh, that's superb.
I mean, own goals, obviously, far more games.
Yes, that's true.
Just gets, right from the start, but consistently, 100-odd years.
Wow. And still going strong.
Yeah. I mean, if I was a Swiss defender... Yeah, we only need a draw to qualify. If we're going to get it against Andorra.
Right. Score a few own goals.
Just one.
Just spoil Rooney's party.
Just be the first man to get
to... In an act of bitterness.
Get to half a century of goals for England. That'd be hilarious.
Brilliant. Okay. There you go, Swiss. That's something to play for. In the meantime, Theo Walcott, he got a brace. You know this. You saw. Okay. They play Switzerland on Tuesday, that game. I'm certainly going to be looking forward to that game in a new way. Let's hope the Swiss take on board.
Are they the first goals Walcott scored since his hat-trick against Croatia?
Wow, that's a good question, Barry. I wish I had a good answer for you. Anybody?
I have a feeling they might be.
Wow. While we check that, let me just mention that Switzerland, as you say, 5 points clear of Estonia. All they need is a draw. This after a remarkable comeback victory in their game. I don't know if anybody caught this. They were 2-0 down against Slovenia going into the last 10 minutes, and then they scored 3 goals... And the last coming four minutes into time added on, which saw the move well clear of the third place side, which is, as I say, Estonia. God, that's terrific, isn't it?
Yeah, he scored also against Sweden in the Euros and in a friendly against Scotland in August 2013.
All right. Harry Kane scored.
Mm-hmm.
What's the name of the group that Scotland and Ireland are in, Barry?
D.
Group D. Let's talk about Group D, where Germany have reasserted their supremacy with a 3-1 win over Poland. 2 for Goetze. Lewandowski got Poland. Müller got the other for Germany. And what does this mean? What does this mean? Ireland can still get second place. They're only 2 points behind Poland now. While Scotland, I think I'm right in saying best chances of playoff, really, they're a point behind Ireland.
But Ireland still have to play Poland away.
Right.
And you can't imagine Ireland are good enough to beat Poland away.
Really?
Yeah, Poland are a very good side.
I'm not even convinced Ireland are good enough to beat Georgia at home, to be honest. That comes first.
Is that this evening?
Yes.
Right. You're fresh from that win over Gibraltar?
Yeah. Robbie Keane, he's out-Rooneyed Rooney. He's up there with Gert Muller now. I think he's one behind. It's 63 international goals.
I think it's 66.
And, he got a superb tap-in.
My favourite part of that tap-in was, it was about 2 yards out. He couldn't miss. It must be the easiest goal he'll ever score. And he ran away as if he twacked it into the top corner from 50 yards out. Brilliant.
Brilliant.
Good celebration.
Well, could be a vital goal, as it turns out. Anyway, they're hosting Georgia.
Head-to-head.
Yeah.
Against Scotland.
Mm. Scotland are hosting Germany this evening. Anything can happen, says Gordon Strachan, when Scotland face Germany.
Yeah.
Especially Germany winning. But you know, it's football.
Germany are going to win that. They were pretty good against Poland, especially down the left hand side where they have Jonas Hector and Karim Bellarabi combining.
Mm.
They look really good, and Goetze is finally showing a bit more form that he's not shown for. Well, he's not really getting a chance at Munich, yeah. But he's, I mean, Löw absolutely loves him.
I had a dream about Mario Götze once, and I haven't liked him since, because I was standing next to a mate from university in the mix zone, and he had a bag on his shoulder.
Is this in your dream?
In the dream, yeah. He deliberately swung it into my mate's midriff and then sort of walked off, kind of grinning over his shoulder. My mate was doubled up.
That's fascinating. Strack
and scored against Germany in the World Cup in 86, didn't he?
Yes.
And famously couldn't get over the advertising hoarding.
Did he? Was that not against Uruguay?
No, it was 18 minutes into the game against West Germany in Querétaro. Okay. And they lost 2-1. That was to put them 1-0 up, though.
Wow.
That Germany game had the best goal of the weekend.
The Lewandowski one.
The Lewandowski one, where the ball was lobbed over to the left-hand side, and Kamil Grzycki took a touch, then curled the ball superbly with the outside of his boot, and Lewandowski finished it off with a diving header.
A fine effort, but I did enjoy Michael Mifsud's one, which I think came in a 2-2 draw for Malta against Azerbaijan. Two goals for the home fans to enjoy. Rare stuff indeed there in Malta, but Mifsud with an absolute screamer.
How old is he these days? He's been around for
ages. I think he's about 40 or something. His nickname is the Maltese Mosquito.
No, he's only 34, Michael Mifsud.
Oh, right. Anyway, well done to him.
But he has been around forever.
He has.
Mosquitoes don't really go bzzz. It's more of a high-pitched... Yeah.
Fair point.
Sorry.
No, you're absolutely spot on.
He only weighs 62 kilograms, so I mean, he really is light.
Wow.
Like a mosquito.
No, that's very, very
he's heavier than a mosquito.
How much do you weigh, Jonathan?
76.
Wow.
I found out the other day that Mario Götze only weighs 66 kilograms. He's the lightest player in the Bayern Munich squad.
Really? He does look quite slight and boyish, though, doesn't he?
He does, but 66 is still very light for somebody who plays up front.
Right. Barry, would you like to get to the bottom of Jonathan's dream? A lot of conventional dream analysis wisdom holds that all elements, all characters in your dream are actually representing elements of yourself, so that you essentially play all the parts in your dream.
Okay, so the concerned observer, I'm playing myself.
Yeah, then Götze would represent something of what football means to you. And your
pain. Pointless, needless, niggly violence.
You're a Sunderland fan, is that right?
That's true, yeah.
Right. And your college friend might represent to you perhaps an earlier iteration of yourself, you know, because you knew this guy back when you were at college.
Right.
And everything was different. I'm just saying.
So it's basically saying football's been hurting me for a long, long time.
Yeah. It has.
Is there maybe a suggestion that Jonathan's taken the wrong path in life and...
Yes.
This reference back to his university, he should have gone and become an eminent surgeon or something instead.
He was knocked off course by a...
What did you study at university?
English, which I'm not sure gets you many surgery jobs.
Right.
And nor should it, really.
No.
There's very little scalpel work.
Anyway, so that's pretty much covered the group there with Scotland and Ireland. But what about Northern Ireland? Tonight they host Hungary at Windsor Park. If they win, Northern Ireland will be joining the likes of Albania and Iceland and, yes, England at Euro 2016. You've seen Hungary in action recently, haven't you? Are you quite a student of the Magyars in their current incarnation?
I wouldn't go that far. I saw them live beat Albania 1-0 just for the World Cup in a friendly, which was a terrible, terrible game. I saw a bit of a game on, I think it was Friday, wasn't it? The draw against Romania. And that was a dreadful game.
That was terrible too, wasn't it?
But what struck me, the Albania game, was something very, very sad about it. It was in the Neckstadion, so, you know, the great stadium that you see back in the early 50s, absolutely packed with 80,000 people or whatever. And I think it was about 3,500 there for the Albania game. Okay, it's a friendly.
3,500?
Yeah. And the whole thing is so sort of low key. And you sort of think, of relatively major European nations. So Hungary's population, what, 15 million, something like that? They don't have a single player. I mean, name a Hungarian player. I mean, Tamás Priskin, but his glory days were playing for Watford between 2006 and 2009, you know.
All off the top of his head, listeners.
It's astonishing that a country that used to be that good could have fallen so low.
So we'll take a moment.
But there are quite a few countries out there. You look at them and you think they should be a lot better than they are. Like I've always thought Finland should be a lot better than they are. I think that's probably only because Yari Littman is Finnish and one of my favourite footballers of all time.
But they haven't been in the World Cup final. It wasn't a period when they were the best nation in the world.
No, I'm aware of that.
Like, you know, you look at a Serbia, say, a more recent successful football tradition in Hungary, but they've got half a dozen good players. I mean, Ivanovic, maybe you take out that list now, but people like Matic, Lazar Markovic will be a good player. I don't think there's another comparable nation that has such a dearth of top class talent as Hungary.
Wow. Romania, it is, who are in second place.
Romania's got no top class talent. But even they've got Pantilimon playing in the Premier League,
right?
You know, one, but still, it's one.
Hmm. They are in second
place. Rats at Rayo Vallecano.
Okay.
34 now, but.
Anyway.
Northern Ireland. Kyle Lafferty.
Yeah. Who I think.
Five goals in seven games.
Wow. It's pretty good, isn't it? Anyway, so they're 1 point clear of Romania, Northern Ireland. And that's all very exciting. They would become the second smallest country to be represented at the Euros behind Iceland, should they qualify.
They have been really good, haven't they, Northern Ireland? It's sort of. I mean, I know they've been slightly fortunate that Greece have imploded, which has taken one of the potential challenges out of that group. But even so, they really deserve that.
Good. Well, they take on Hungary this evening. They could seal the deal. Spain won in that big match against Slovakia, which puts them back on top of the group, but only on goal difference. Austria are almost through after their 1-0 win against Moldova, which means they've had five straight clean sheets. And they are well clear of Russia. It's Sweden in second place and then Russia. And Portugal visit Albania this evening in a very big game. How do you rate Albania, Jonathan? They're, I think, 22nd in the world for FIFA. What do you think of them? You excited by them?
Well, they certainly weren't 22nd best in the world when I saw them last year. But, I mean, they beat France in a friendly earlier this year, didn't they? They won in Portugal, so they've obviously improved. I guess they're one of the more exciting stories. The fact that they haven't really threatened to qualify for anything before, and
they got a decent draw at the weekend too.
Yeah,
at home to our away to Denmark.
I mean, have you been to see Albanian football?
Yeah, it was in 2011. It was to escape the royal wedding here.
Ah,
and I ended up in a taxi with a taxi driver who, for a 2.5 hour journey, insisted on playing Albanian commentary on the royal wedding. Which I only realised about 10 minutes in when suddenly they sort of said, His Royal Highness, Prince William.
Right. Did you know, producer Ben furnished me with two interesting facts here.
Two.
Well, he furnished me with 10, but I'm thinking that two of them are interesting. The first is that 33% of Albanians actually would like to re-establish their own monarchy. No doubt excited by the prospect of having similar...
Well, they approached C.B. Fry, didn't they, to become king? I mean, maybe somebody should mention that, you know, he's gone now.
Right. I'd forgotten that.
Yeah. I went to King Zog's Palace in Duish.
Good.
No, it's an astonishing place. It's sort of up on the hill.
Yep.
I mean, if Albania sort of opens out and develops a bit, it would be a fantastic place for a kind of nice hotel. There's great views over there. We sort of blagged our way in. And there's a barrier there, but there's this group coming up behind us. And they look quite official, so we just sort of tagged on behind them, and they got let in. And it's basically been left as it was, I don't know, 60, 80 years ago, whenever. So it's all marble staircases and parquet flooring that's sort of falling down. Incredibly, I mean, yeah, health and safety-wise, it's awful, but it's fascinating to see a thing falling down like that. But if anybody wants to set up a luxury hotel in Duresh, I recommend King Zog's Palace is a good place to put it.
Very nice, but hopefully not a McDonald's there.
Because no.
This is the second interesting fact that Ben has managed to come up with. Albania, Armenia and the Vatican City, the only European countries without a single branch of said fast food outlet, apparently. So.
Well, what they also have, all over the country, they have these little concrete bunkers because Hoxha was so terrified of the prospect of attack. So they call mushrooms. Why are you shaking your head?
Because I'm agreeing with you, Jonathan. Because here's another interesting fact about Albania. You nod your head to mean no and shake it to mean yes.
Yeah.
There you go.
And these bunkers are so sort of hard to, you know, they're so good at defending you that they basically can't destroy them. So they're just stuck all over the place.
Wow.
And the bloke who designed them, as soon as he sort of went with the plans, went, yeah, this is what you want, this is how you do it, they just put him inside one and fired tanks at it. And 10 minutes later, he emerged alive. And, yep, wow. Okay, that seems to work.
Wow. Crikey. Albania, listeners, there you go. That's pretty much it for our international roundup. Although we haven't mentioned Italy yet. 2-1-0 wins for them. One, in slightly controversial circumstances, against Malta, who are another of those small countries who do really well. Goal by Graziano Pelle, but it was kind of a handball. Although Italy did dominate. And then they beat Bulgaria 1-0 with a De Rossi penalty. He got sent off. Anyway, they're now back on top of their group with Norway leapfrogging Croatia into second place with Celtic's
Joe Berget
doing the business game.
Yeah, he scored one and I think he had a deflection went in. But he's having a remarkable career renaissance considering he couldn't actually get in the Celtic or didn't cover himself in glory in Cardiff either.
Mm.
It could be some very good teams in these playoffs, couldn't they? I mean, all this talk about the Euros sort of too big at 24 teams and whatever, but if you look at teams in third, you could have a Dutch if you're lucky.
Mm-hmm.
You could have Croatia.
Scotland.
You could have, yeah. and then whoever comes third in that Portugal-Denmark-Albania group.
Wow. That'd be fun.
Ukraine as well.
Ukraine. When are the playoffs, Jonathan?
Later. November?
They generally are, aren't they?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. That's it for part two, listeners. Only one more of these to go, and it features your questions.
This Guardian podcast is supported by Squarespace. If you want to build a website, you've got many options. But if you want to build it beautiful, there's only one. Squarespace gives you the power of world-class design so you can do more than create a website. You can set yourself apart. See why some of the world's most influential people, brands and businesses choose Squarespace. To start your free trial, head to squarespace.com/guardian.
Part three of round. Many thanks to everyone who came along to our live event in a cathedral, strangely, on Thursday. Enjoyed your company and especially your questions. How we could do with those right now. I've got one or two sent in. This sounds quite a serious question. Andrew McDonald saying, are the effects of TV money beginning to push the Premier League towards parity? Serious topic, Claxon. Is that what's happening?
Maybe a little bit. I mean, I think the emergence of the Premier League's middle class is a clear trend over the last 6 months or so. Yeah, the likes of Swansea and Crystal Palace. The fact that Swansea can get something, you know, they can pay the wages to get something like Dede Alli is...
Mm.
I don't think that was possible 5 years ago. The fact that West Ham can get Payet Kabay to Palace, and then those are just deals that wouldn't have happened. So in that sense, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And these are deals that have kicked in or that have been signed before the bumper deal that was signed earlier this year. So it's going to be even more so next summer.
Absolutely. And then when the foreign TV deal comes in, which bumps things up even further, perhaps there'll be another step up there.
If you look at the Deloitte report, you know, the richest clubs in the world by revenue, between 21 and 30, that's where you sort of suddenly realise the power of the Premier League. That there's five Premier League clubs between 21 and 30. So Sunderland, for instance, are 27th, West Ham are 21st. You think West Ham, you know, are going to get revenue from the TV deal and the Olympic Stadium, so they're going to, you know, be propelled into the teens pretty quickly. I think Stoke might be in that 20. Anyway, there's five Premier League teams, none of whom you'd think of as being, yeah, massive teams.
Wow.
Along with, I think all the other five teams from 21 and 30 have all been in a Champions League final at some point. Where so Hamburg, Roma, people like that.
The effect on the rest of Europe of this, I saw an interesting argument that there was almost like scorched earth around the Premier League and that maybe one club per league was managing to hang on by selling players and dominating the rest of their league. But
I think that was happening anyway.
That was.
Well, I mean, look, Bayern won the Bundesliga the last 3 years in a row.
Yeah, Juventus,
by
PSG.
Pretty much record margins each time. Juve, PSG.
Mm.
Yeah, it's just what happens these days.
But the Premier League is now effectively subsidising, especially Germany and France.
I think it's 20% of all, low 20% of all Premier League transfer spending went to the Bundesliga. So
it's remarkable. Speaking anyway of the middle class, Damien Buckley says Newport County had John Lewis and Bowden leading the line against York today. Is that the most bourgeois strike force of the weekend?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Alan Johnson says, theme for Monday, does the average height of a team have an impact on its success? Or when he also asks, how far ahead of John Ashdown is Barry in the number of beer types sampled this year?
How far ahead?
Yeah.
God,
I think he's joking, Barry.
I've probably sampled about four different types.
But you've gone back to make sure several times.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jonathan? Height. How important is height? I tell you what, I'll just throw some stats at you. Stoke are no longer the tallest outfield group of players in the Premier League.
Right. There's a time 2 or 3 years ago when the two shortest teams in Europe were Barcelona and St Mirren.
Really?
Which had suggested no correlation whatsoever.
Right. Well, the tallest group of outfield players at the moment, I believe, is Newcastle, who are residing down in the bottom three. And the second smallest, well, the smallest are Arsenal, of course. The second smallest are Man City, which suggests that height is in no way important, that perhaps actually...
I think previously that might have been the case, but not with the way football is played now.
All right.
Well, I think it probably also depends where in the league you are. So short, skillful players are good if you're at the top. But if you're at the bottom, having some big lads helps.
Ready for a scrap.
Yeah.
I was wanted to ask Jonathan what he makes of events unfolding at the Stadium of Light this season.
I'm overjoyed. I'm going up there.
Do you have any explanation as to why they're so this particular shambles, or is it just a continuation of?
It's just a continuation. I mean, they've got themselves in a position where they were overspending on wages. I think from the end of the Drumcondra period, so when Ellis Short took over, they had a very high wage bill, and their attempts to cut that wage bill have not worked, and they then had to bring players in at the last minute. And which has meant that the wage bills remain steady, but actually quality of players dipped. And then they do things like, you know, they signed Sebastian Coates at the end of last season, which I actually think was a perfectly reasonable deal for 1.8 million or whatever, because he did play really well towards the end of last season. But then they're not playing as deep as they were last season. Coates got no pace. If you're not defending deep, it's not going to work. So I think they've also got a problem that Jermaine Defoe is the only player who can score goals. But he doesn't really fit in a system with any of the other players. So you end up asking him to play on the left wing all the time, which he obviously doesn't like. So, I don't know, it just looks... I don't really see any logic in the makeup of the squad. Well, the only logic there, the only consistent thing is they keep signing 30-odd-year-old defenders whose best days are behind them.
Mm.
Good.
Yep.
Any prospects for improvement, do you think?
Well, it is getting slowly better. That they've drawn the last two games and they were ahead for a bit in the last one.
Villa and Swansea.
Yeah.
Hmm.
I'm going up to the Tottenham game a week Sunday, which will be the first time I've seen them live this season. Although I fear that they might get taken apart.
Will they stick with Advocaat for the season?
Yeah, I mean, yes, partly because he did really well at the end of last season, and partly because I think the manager's almost irrelevant to the problems they've got. I don't know. I mean, who could you bring in who you could guarantee would be better apart from Sam Allardyce, which will happen at some point?
Yeah, that's a certainty.
All right. Well,
probably March. Ready for the late surge to finish fourth bottom.
Final word then goes to Graham Kirk and Ian Morrison, who say we're talking about a player whose car broke down on the way to the medical and they decided that it was a sign from God and didn't bother to go. It was Claudio Taffarel. You remember the Brazil goalkeeper? Yeah. Anything else you want to add, Jaunty?
No.
Barry?
I discovered over the weekend that the provider of the assist for the winning goal in the 1912 FA Cup final was Bob Glendenning.
Is that right?
Yes.
Any relation?
I don't know. I'm going to try and find out.
Was that when you went to the football museum?
It sort of came out of that, yeah. Right. I was researching something sort of that I'd seen at the football museum.
Glendenning, huh? All right. Very good. Well, that's it for today's pod. Many thanks for joining us, Jonathan Wilson and Ian McCourt and Barry Glendenning and producer Ben. We're back on Thursday. Enjoy your holidays, Barry.
Thank you.
And enjoy your week, listeners. We'll be back on Thursday. Bye-bye.